Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we are once again in the Billy Meyer case. Billy's experiences started when he was about 4 years old, but currently Edward Albert Meyer is an 80-year-old man. He lives in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti, about 45 minutes east of Zurich, nestled among the mountains of northern Switzerland. He's written something like 50 books. Part of the information of these books comes from his extraterrestrial contacts, which began when he was about 5 years old. But if you go back to 3 a.m. one morning on a mild night in May in 1941, he went outside and sat down on a bench that his father had made and looked up at a beautiful starry sky and said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." And a short time later, words suddenly formed on Billy's lips, which said, "Since ancient times, you have lived among the stars." And Billy at that time knew who he was, what his mission on the earth was, and he got these impulses, which later he recognized as impulses from something called the storage banks. And we have storage banks around our planet, around our solar system, around our galaxy, and in our universe. And these storage banks are archives of information, but not physical archives like libraries that contain physical books. These are energetic archives that have information in them. And Billy was very sensitive to the impulses that were coming out of these storage banks. And he had many good memories that penetrated him and showed him the way that he should go in life. And he recognized the light which the stars emitted, but that was a light in the visible spectrum. But he knew of another kind of light which remained invisible and creational. And he said, or later he would write, "Indeed, the beaming stars were there, which stirred in me an unfamiliar longing for the vast distance and the faraway worlds." And then suddenly, words formed on his lips again, which said, "Since ancient times, you have lived among the stars." And he suddenly knew who he was and how he was and what his mission on the earth was. And at that very young age, Billy realized that everything that exists in the whole universe is a manifestation of the might and the infinite true love of the mighty universal consciousness, which he simply called creation. And through all of that, Billy learned to separate the wheat from the chaff, and he looked to the truth by looking inward and in one's inner and innermost, as well in one's own intellect, in one's own reason and own thoughts and contemplations and feelings. And from this, Billy started to learn the idea of self-responsibility, and that the recognition and fulfillment of responsibility dealt with himself, but fellow human beings, the worlds of plants and animals, and in regard to something called the creational laws. You see, there's a superintelligence in our universe. It's a neutral intelligence. It's not a Heavenly Father. It's not even a personification. It doesn't have a personality. but it still radiates love in its own impersonal way, much like the sun radiates light and heat. And all life in our solar system depends on our sun radiating light and heat. And much like that, the life in the universe depends on the works of this spiritual intelligence. The Meyer material, do not call God, but use the term universal consciousness or creation. And Billy later would have his first sighting, and he was with his father at this time, and he was in a place called Eichenmoserberg, I believe, and he felt a desire to look high above the eastern horizon for something, and what he saw was a silver flash, which stopped and became a huge discus, about 200 to 300 meters in diameter, which sped away and disappeared over the Oregon forest. Now later, Billy would start to get these telepathic messages from a man named Svoth. And Svoth was an extraterrestrial human about 1,000 years old. He was from a race of human beings that seemed, in a way, related to our ancestors as well. And they are from the Pleiaden star system, although they have allowed themselves to be called the Pleiadians. They're not from our Pleiades, but they reside in a different space-time configuration, some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades. And they live on a world called Era, and they have interacted with the people of the Earth for the most part in our ancient past. But they have, during the lifetime of Edward Albert Meyer, to support him in a teaching mission, because young Edward Albert Meyer has been in his previous lives the people that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And he taught an ancient universal teaching in each one of those lifetimes that was twisted by the religious doctrine of the day. So it was always distorted and twisted. In this lifetime, he's here to write this information down, and it's stored in those 50 books that I was telling you about at the beginning of the show. One of the books we're going to look at tonight is called The Might of Thoughts. And each one of these books that Billy writes are bilingual, so they'll have German on one page, English on another. And he recommends that you learn the German in order to have a deeper understanding, because translating many of these concepts into English is quite challenging. So we'll deal with that a little bit later in the show, but I wanted to at least reintroduce this material. Svoth, again, was a Pleiaden man who was going to be Billy's mentor for the first 11 years of Billy's life, and Svoth would land his silvery pear-shaped craft in the northern part of Switzerland in an area called Bulak. He would take Billy up into the ship, and he had at least one time put a device on Billy's head that protected Edward from those who might try to attack his consciousness. And it also woke up abilities that Billy had in these previous lives as Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. Because Billy has been reincarnating on the earth. His spirit form is sometimes referred to as the universal prophet, because it reincarnates on worlds in order to speed up the evolution on the planet. And Svoth was here to mentor Billy for the first 11 years of his life, and he would land his rather strange, silvery, pear-shaped craft in Bulak and young Edward would receive a telepathic message and go out to the area where the ship was, and then through some technological means, Billy would be lifted up into the craft. And Billy described it as being lifted up by ghostly hands. And Spoth would take Billy up into the ship, into orbit around the Earth. And Spoth would teach him things. One of the things that Billy was taught is that the intention of the spiritual teachings in general is to wake the Earth humans up out of their sleep. And we're in a kind of sleep here on the Earth. We are called by the Maya material insane. We are called ill in our consciousness. We are called indolent and obtuse and many other negative things. And the spiritual teaching is here to wake us out of that self-destruction. Billy met with Spoth for about 11 years, and then he got his second teacher, who was a woman named Asket. Asket was from the Tao universe. Our universe is about 46 trillion years old, according to Maya material. The Tao universe is the sister universe, which I believe came from the same Zohar, the same Big Bang, or there were two Big Bangs almost exactly at the same time. And Asket's people are called the Timmers, and they developed the technology to leave our universe and go into this parallel universe thousands of years ago. And they can do that without damaging themselves or the universe. And they have started to populate this second universe, this other universe. There are many, many universes in a much bigger area that the Maya material calls the absolute absolutum. And our universe is said to be in the first stage of its evolution because it has material in it. It has a physical reality. There are seven belts in all universes, and they counter-rotate against one another. And our fourth belt is the material belt. That's where the stars, the galaxies, and all the material in the universe is. And the same with the Tao universe, the parallel universe that Billy's second mentor lives in. And she traveled from that universe into our universe roughly around 1953. And Asket sent a robotic craft to Switzerland, to a hillside in Switzerland, on a very cold evening. And Billy was picked up and sent to the Middle East at high rate of speed. And he met with his second mentor, Asket. And they took this very interesting trip far below the Giza Plateau. Asket told Billy that the Great Pyramid was about 73,000 years old, and that there were these old cubical constructions far below the Great Pyramid, which were also about 73,000 years old. And Billy and Asket traveled with some special technology that kept them invisible, and they went into these underground caverns where they eventually came to this gigantic hallway that was the headquarters of what are called the Giza intelligences. And these super intelligences were extraterrestrial humans, a group that had split off from the Pleiar and that were using religion and technology to try to set themselves up as the controllers of the Earth. And they had represented themselves as gods in ancient times. And according to Maya information, the Jehovah that appears in the Old Testament was allegedly one of these leaders of this extraterrestrial group. So as a very young boy, Billy got to go down these long, dark caverns and see the craft of these extraterrestrials, as well as some of their strangely dressed guards and some other artifacts. Billy learned very much from Ascot. He also allegedly took time travels with Ascot and allegedly went to the time of Christ, the person we call Christ. Allegedly also traveled to the year right around 1300, where Billy got to see the pristine Earth in its ideal state with a tremendously thick oxygen. Billy at this time was in his late teens and early 20s, and he eventually went to the Middle East, where he studied at what was called the Ashoka Ashram, and there often Ascot's ship would hover over the ashram because Ascot would beam down and then teach Billy various things in the Ashoka Ashram. And when Billy was there, there was a young girl who was named Phobal Chang, who eventually became a diplomat at the United Nations. And later in life, the two would reminisce, and Phobal visited Billy in Switzerland, and they talked about Ascot because they had both got to see her. Now, the people that were there at the Ashoka Ashram thought she was a goddess, and I believe Phobal Chang recognized that she was actually an advanced extraterrestrial human. Ascot's people were here during that time to prevent a great disaster on the Earth. We were never told exactly what that disaster was. It could have been a nuclear war. I really don't know. But Ascot's people came here to stop that great disaster. And they had some very difficult rules to follow, and that they couldn't directly interfere with us. But yet they were required to, of course, stop this disaster. Ascot's people, the Timmers, are a little more advanced technologically than the Plejaren, and they gave the Plejaren the technology to create these gigantic motherships. And Billy got to travel in one of these motherships when he met his third teacher. Billy met with Svath for 11 years, and he was mentored by Ascot for about 11 years. And finally, then, in about 1975, I think it was on roughly in the early months of 1975, he started having his first contacts with Semyase. Semyase was an extraterrestrial human, a female who was the granddaughter of Svath. And although she looked about 30 years old, she was actually 344 years old. She would land her silvery craft in Switzerland there, close to where Billy was living, and he would ride his moped out to roughly where she was, and then she would start to teach him many things. One of the important contacts that occurred at that time was Contact Report 10, where Billy was introduced by Ascot to the spiritual teaching. Unfortunately, in December of 77, Ascot suffered a life-threatening accident at the Semyase Silver Star Center when one of the people at the center, a man named Jacobus, I believe, walked in while Billy and Ascot were talking. You see, the Plejaren, because they're so advanced, they are very sensitive mentally and psychologically to thoughts They're very telepathic. They're very empathic. And they're so far advanced that the typical Earth human produces a thought vibration that is very uncomfortable for them, and it literally causes them to lose control of their physical body. She fell and hit her head, was beamed back to her ship for a while, and then eventually she had to be taken to her home planet of Era for medical treatment and rehabilitation. She suffered a cerebral collapse in 1984. She came back eventually from the first accident, but suffered a cerebral collapse in 1984 and had to be transported to the Tao universe, where she was healed with the help of Vasket and another group of people, some very strange, unusual extraterrestrials called the Sonar, which have some amazing abilities. I believe they don't need physical ships to travel through time and space. It's very, very interesting. It will take about 70 years for Semyase to recover from that accident. But when she was here, she taught Billy about the human spirit. And we all have what's called the Geist form in the German, a human spirit. The spirit form resides in the center of our middle brain. It's called the superior colliculus, the area that integrates our seeing, our hearing, our senses. And there's a tiny spark of incredibly powerful energy there. It's called the spirit form, and every human has a spirit form. It never dies, it never sleeps. It records all of our thoughts, emotions, and it informs us if our thinking is right or wrong if we've learned to pay attention to it. It's said to be a telstock or a fragment of the universal consciousness. Our universe has an intelligence, a consciousness, that creates human beings in spirit forms. And these spirit forms reincarnate over millions and millions and even billions of years in different bodies and different personalities in order to learn and eventually bring that knowledge back to creation. And that's the purpose of our lives. Is reincarnating many, many times so that we can evolve our consciousness. And this was the teaching that Semyase brought. The spirit form is also known as your spiritual consciousness. You see, we have a spiritual consciousness and a material consciousness. Our spiritual consciousness never dies, it never sleeps. It records everything that we do, and it will tell us always if our thinking is right or wrong. Well, we have a material consciousness, which is who you are in this lifetime. It is your personality, it's your unconscious, and it's your subconsciousness. Your innermost creational personality is your related to this spiritual consciousness. It is always neutral positive. It can never be threatened. It can never be sick. It is, you might call it the real you. It threatens our material consciousness, so to speak. Our material consciousness is sometimes called the false ego, the erat self, and it tries to control everything. But the spirit form and the spiritual consciousness is the sum total of the wisdom of all your lifetimes. So each lifetime, you gain a little more wisdom and a little more knowledge The spirit form enters into the body of a child 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. And the spirit form is this tiny bit of energy that places itself in this middle area of your middle brain in the superior colliculus. And the energy from the spirit form radiates throughout the entire body and spreads out evenly all over the human body inside and out without losing one iota of its power. It brings life to every cell in the body. It causes the heart to beat. It's the energizing force. It's a fragment of the universal consciousness. And in Contact Report 11, Sannyasi said, in the non-creational thinking human being, the material intellect, which we were talking about, your material consciousness, with all its given limitation, takes the highest place and thereby has a consequently a tremendously slow development of the spirit and the consciousness, because we have such an emphasis on the material intellect. And let me continue. The material intellect accepts the testimony of the material senses and their resulting conclusion, but it rejects your deepest subjective intuitions. And these intuitions are coming from the spirit form. So we've been programmed to think in a way that stunts our spiritual growth. And what the Meyer material says, and let me read this to you. Therefore, in order to avoid the downfall of humanity in the new millennium, in the third millennium, it is necessary to find the way back to creational truth and the creational laws and recommendations. Let me quickly describe the creational natural laws. The first is the law of love, and that is a reverence, not a romantic love, but a reverence of every living thing. Everything in the universe is bound together and it's all one. And it's said best, I think, in what's called Love Letter 27, where Billy says, love is the highest principle in all creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And the indescribable splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And creation is radiating love. And that's why Billy, as a very, very young boy, was picking up these impulses that are related to the radiating love of creation. In fact, love will forever be the purpose of our existence. Love and wisdom go together. And the creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. So this universal, neutral, positive, non-romantic love is the first creational natural law. The second creational natural law is the law of striving, that every living thing has to strive to survive, and our happiness is dependent on our willingness to strive and our focus on our striving. And I always read this few paragraphs in page 102 of Billy's book called The Way to Live. It says, striving creates the life right up to the being. Striving means delectation, which is like a satisfaction, in a form which is always fulfilling and progressive. To be without striving means unwillingness and affliction. Affliction is inhibited striving and inhibited life, but inhibited striving and inhibited life bring inhibited evolution, stagnation, and hopelessness and disharmony. Well, let me throw something in this whole idea of striving. We're also told to fulfill our duty to ourselves. So if you're striving so hard in one way that you're neglecting to fulfill your duty to yourself, you'll go into a unbalanced, non-neutral, positive way. And then even your striving can be a source of misery. So be your own best friend and challenge your body and your mind. Get exercise. Don't let yourself appear ragged. Don't have negative thoughts about yourself. Don't have inferiority thoughts. always fulfill your duty to yourself while you're striving, and that will keep you balanced. But you sometimes go through these periods of intense striving. If you have inhibited evolution, cognitionlessness, unpeace, joylessness, disharmony, lovelessness, resentment, lies, reluctance for life, all of this stuff are indications that your striving needs to be pushed on. And it can also be an indication that you're not fulfilling your duty to yourself. Fulfilling your duty to yourself means exercise properly, eating properly, thinking properly. One of the greatest focuses on this teaching is learning to think the proper way. And so the first creational natural law is the law of love. The second is the law of striving. The third is the law of harmony. And that's where our thinking comes in, and that's where the mighty thoughts comes in. That's pretty much the focus of the show today, is more understanding about the law of harmony, how we should control our thoughts. We're told to be neutral positive in our thinking. That means you're positive, but you're not overly positive. You're not out of balance. You recognize the negative. You see, the negative and the positive are two forces which belong together, and they should never be separated. And if you try to push the negative out of your life, you will become, excuse my pronunciation of the German word, Erschöpfung, or out of control of the good human nature. That's where you go into behavior patterns and thought patterns, which are self-destructive. So this fourth creational natural law is the law of harmony. Remember, the first was the law of love, the second was the law of striving, the third, is the law of harmony. Hopefully I didn't leave one out there. The fourth law we talked about a little bit is the law of reincarnation. A fifth law deals with population. The planets our size should have about 1 billion people living on them, not 9 billion. We're in grave danger because of our misunderstanding of these creational natural laws. I think it's important to reiterate these on a regular basis. So in order to have and live in the law of harmony, we have to not nurture negative thoughts. The human being many times nurtures sick, bad, and negative thoughts. And this will cause you to be sick. I was sick, I think, about 2 weeks ago. I think I had some negative thoughts creeping in. Optimists live longer. Having a positive attitude lowers your risk of heart attack. So it is necessary to control the very origins of our thoughts. And if we have good, clean, neutral, positive thoughts, then our psyche will not be harmed. Okay, let me remind this term. We have something called a psyche, which controls the thoughts and the feelings of our material consciousness. We have something called the Gemüt, which controls the thoughts and the feelings of our spiritual consciousness. The spiritual consciousness is the permanent. The material consciousness is different with each lifetime. The material consciousness is weak. It can be harmed. It needs to constantly be reminded and taught and reinforced to affirm. We need to affirm the material consciousness, to offer it emotional support, to encourage it. And this is an interesting idea. Make sure that your thoughts are offering you emotional support and encouragement. Remember, be your own best friend. No thoughts of inferiority. No thoughts of self-abuse. Fulfill your duty to yourself. Many times our thoughts are actually discouraging us. Do not discourage yourself. Or these negative thoughts will actually express themselves on your face, and you can cause yourself to age quicker. you can cause more wrinkles to appear on your face than you need. And there's no better doctor for the human being than these neutral, positive, equalized thoughts. Remember, the universe is neutral, positive. Now, if we go into this unbalanced state of thinking, either way negative, that's what usually happens, or some people actually go way positive. If that happens, you will confine yourself in a self-created imprisonment. If you think of peace, love, joy, freedom, harmony every single day, you will bring that kind of environment into your life. But if you get out of balance, you'll get badly out of control of the good human nature. The majority of all human matters have their roots solely in the mind of the thoughts. For example, anxiety and fear kill thousands of human beings. Anxious thoughts have a demoralizing effect in every regard. If you feel yourself becoming demoralized, repeat after me. Say, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm satisfied, I have hope. I do not allow my thoughts to drift. I steer my thoughts. I'm the master of my own destiny. Wrong thoughts shake up your entire nervous system. Neutral positive thoughts build up your resistance. So one's thinking should therefore be constructive. Don't let yourself fall into this bad habit of letting your thoughts drift, because most of the time we go negative shortly after that. Thoughts require pure, healthy nourishment. If you see too many wrinkles appearing on your face, this can be at times because of the misuse of thoughts, self-created suffering, wrongly expressed pride, misdirected thoughts, which trigger the emotions, are another problem that we're going to talk about here shortly. So you can help improve your own appearance by imprinting your face with strong, pure thoughts. If a person has lived peacefully and harmoniously, then their death will be like a beautiful sunset, and they'll be prepared to cross over into the realm of spiritual light. But do not be like most humans who allow their thought boats to drift. Letting your thoughts drift is a very bad thing. I have had to fight a habit of doing that. If you allow your thoughts to drift and you start the wrong negative destructive thoughts, you'll have feelings which form in the same wrong negative way. The body becomes susceptible to illnesses and disease. The immune system becomes impaired in its effectiveness. If you have constructive thoughts, beautiful thoughts, positive thoughts, then the feelings are positive. The psyche forms itself in a positive way. Now, there's this notion of having a purposefulness in your thoughts, something I'm still working on trying to understand. I read this book so many times, it's practically embarrassing. There's so much information here, as you know if you've listened to the show before. The might of the thoughts is only effective when there is a definite intention. I believe it's pronounced zeal, almost with the T sound. We want a definite intention associated with our thoughts. Your conscious mind is awareness at the present moment. Sometimes people say we have three minds, the conscious, the subconscious, and the unconsciousness. The conscious mind is your objective thinking mind. You know, your conscious mind is said not to have a memory. It really only holds on to one thought at a time. It identifies information. It compares information. It does analysis. If you're in my field, you do that all the time. And finally, you make a decision. Well, that is not where the power of your thoughts are. The power of your thoughts are in the subconscious and the unconscious, or the preconscious mind. So, we have, let me read this to you directly. It says, the unconscious mind, consisting of the primitive instinctual wishes, as well as information that we cannot access. The unconscious is the part of the mind that is mostly inaccessible, but it affects our behavior and our emotions. It's something you have to be aware of. But the unconscious mind has a reservoir of feelings, thoughts, urges, and memories that are outside of our awareness. Sometimes you have a thought and you don't know where it comes from. Sometimes these bubble up from the unconscious. Most of the contents of the unconsciousness are, much of it is unacceptable, unpleasant. We have feelings of anxiety, pain down there. But this unconscious still affects us. The unconscious mind is allowed, it has its own thoughts. This is so amazing to me anyway. The unconscious, you can think of as an iceberg. Everything above the water is our conscious awareness. Everything below the water is the unconsciousness. So much of it lies below the surface. So when we're setting a seal, we have to be purposeful, intentional. We want to manifest a purpose. A purpose is something set up as an object or an endpoint. Now, this comes from page 160. I'm going to have to speed up or I'm not going to make it to what I wanted to talk about tonight. The intention of setting its seal can be unconscious or conscious. This is, to me, astonishing. Our unconscious mind is actually doing life determination, setting endpoints. It's amazing that that's just going on. The fact that not only conscious strivings towards its seal occurs, and rather also unconscious ones are thereby able to come to fruition due to the nature and the mind of the thoughts. So we have this unconscious, which is doing things, which is setting these life determinations, these endpoints. I'm avoiding saying goal because the Meyer material says that's not an appropriate translation. So this is the whole idea of setting a seal. And one thing it's very important that we need to learn is that we need to learn and help live, and we're not. We drive our bulldozers and destroy the beautiful wooded areas, and this is happening. We neglect our animals, so much roadkill from animals. Raccoons, deer, cats, squirrels, skunks, everything. We're destroying the natural world because we don't understand to live and help live. We don't understand what love is. We don't understand what our purpose is in life. So let me quickly reiterate the important things to tell yourself. First, that you're confident, you're optimistic, you're cheerful, you're relaxed, you're enthusiastic, you're thankful, you're in harmony, you persist, you persevere, you endure, you're calm, you're satisfied, you have hope. And it's important to have cheerfulness. Cheerfulness and perseverance are critical. Optimism is something that we have to continually have. I want to talk about our favorite page here in the Meyer material right now, page 224 of the Might of Thoughts, and talk about the life power, or I've been corrected, it's called the Lebenskraft. It is necessary to search for the source of the life power and to develop the power in order to have a reliable life potential upon which you can depend, therefore in which you can completely trust. So we have, if we're told to search for the source of the life power and to develop it. I had a problem with this when I first read it because I thought, well, how can I develop my own life power? This is just, how can I do this? And if you read on a little farther, it says, the source of the life power, the Lebenskraft in the German, must be created by oneself. It lies in the consciousness. That is to say, in the thoughts, which must be formed, tended, and nurtured in such a way that they correspond. And I don't like this translation. I don't understand what it means. Progressive, kind, and wise, equipped with a seal, a determination for life, an intention, and endeavor. We're told to search for the source of the life power. And I wonder if the source of the life power is healthy, neutral, positive thoughts, which radiate from our consciousness. I have found if I fulfill my duty to myself and put that first and do things like exercise, it triggers a kind of thinking which is helpful or develops the life power. This is my theory. If you've ever been in a crowd of people where the life power is very low, and I know this is a subjective opinion, but you look around and you see a lot of people that don't seem like they're too healthy, don't seem like they're too positive. It makes an impression on you, and you realize how important it is to search for the source of your life power and cultivate the thoughts which help the life power that you have. The definition for the word source, what is the source? You're told to search for the source of the life power. The source is a point of origin. It's a beginning, the initiation. A source is something or someone that causes or produces something, or the origin. The German word for life power is Lebenskraft. And the Lebenskraft can also mean life force. A living power, a vital energy. Lebenskraft means vitality. It also sometimes refers to animal spirit. And in contact report 39, Billy's talking with one of his contacts, one of the extraterrestrials called Ptah, and they are discussing the human being's mental forces. And it says here in contact report 39, then the case is indeed clear that there's something else, however, you should explain for everyone. For the interest of our cause, namely the connections of certain connections with the age of the Earth human being, I already know about these things because Svath informed me about them when I was a young boy. Nevertheless, these things were never written down, so others aren't oriented about them. I'm referring to the fact that the mental forces of every human being are capable of raising or lowering the life force of others. So your thoughts can lower your life force and or lower the life force of others. How important to be optimistic and cheerful. The thinking of a life form through the cooperation of the spirit produces an extremely logical, thus creation-related force that is released as a high-frequented vibration, a radiation, which is said to be able to influence everything. And we used to live 1,000 years when we were still close to these Pleiaren, when they were still here on the Earth. And the Meyer information said, one of the things that depleted our life force was our religion, which shorten our lifespans. The wrong thinking, which is the power of the consciousness, shortens the lifespan. If you have the wrong thoughts, you should be neutral, positive all the time. Here's something in the OM, or the OM, about the Lebenskraft. Everything that the human inherits, everything that he brings with him through the billionfold existence of the past, everything that he enjoyed, knew, read, learned, or experienced in past life, lies concealed in the unconsciousness. Therefore, he that does not master the technique of concentration. We need to learn the technique of concentration in order to help this life power. And it says here we need to fight against the forces of our own stupidity and learn to utilize our consciousness to positively affect the life power. The Lebenskraft is seen in the Tree of Life symbol, which shows lines moving upward. However, our peace symbol has the lines moving downward. The turnaround Tree of Life does not let the force of life become effective, but lets the force flow into the ground. And that way life's counterpart becomes the annihilator of life. The so-called peace symbol today that we use, which is upside down, symbolizes destruction, which is maybe that's why the earth is becoming the planet of unnecessary death, as I call it, thus fulfilling an important part in the life of the human being. The so-called peace symbol refers to wrong, senseless death, the way we use the peace symbol. The Maya material has the Tree of Life symbol, which the lines go upward. Okay, let's talk about more the Lebenskraft. The spirit of the human being, the Geist form, we were talking about it earlier, is more or less the fine fluid or energy source. It's your indestructible life power. The life power is said to be indestructible, the life power of the spirit. It will never die. Only the human being has the ability of the evolutive consciousness. The plants and the animals cannot evolve their consciousness. Let me continue here. Page 224. The source of the life power. Now this is the tricky part. Which must be created by oneself, lies in the consciousness, that is to say, in the thoughts, which must be formed, intended, and nurtured in such a way that they correspond to a progressive, kind, and wise, equipped with a zeal, what's called a zeal for life. We are running out of time here. I got about 8 minutes, I believe. 8 minutes, I'm just checking. I didn't want to suddenly just get derailed. And I must say that the first time I read the life power, that we must be created by myself, I was a bit disturbed. How could I create this life power within myself? And it took me a couple of weeks of thinking about this. It's hard to... for me to realize how long I've been thinking about this already, because it still feels like such a new concept. So we have certain thoughts that do in fact invigorate us. And these thoughts that give us strength and energy. So the key is to have thoughts which enhance your life power. Start to recognize them. You'll be cheerful, you'll be happy, you'll have a lot of energy. At those times, think about what your thoughts are when you have those times where you're cheerful, you have a lot of energy, you're carefree, you just want to go and do something. That's when your life power is peak. That's my theory anyway. I'm sticking with it for now. You have other thoughts which drain your energy. Seems that exercise helps to create the life power. Page 224, let me continue here, it says, but ideas are incompletely developed factors which must first be thoroughly contemplated. So you have these incomplete concepts called IDEAS. They must be worked through to handle the values and unvalues in them. So the idea, IDEA, is an incomplete, undeveloped, unripe thing. However, the ideal, IDEAL, is completely developed and thought through. And we are encouraged to totally develop and think through our ideas. ideas so they can become ideals with an L. I found a very unusual term or application for the word idea in Contact Report 257, which talks about something the world leaders are planning, which is a quote-unquote hoaxed alien invasion. And let me see what Meyer material says here. It says, and so the population should be left in ignorance about the truth of the existence of extraterrestrials. Nevertheless, however, that fear must be established in the people against the extraterrestrials, out of which a far-reaching hate must be established against the invaders, and thereby once again a defensive rage steered by hate should result. In other words, this is what the elite is doing now. They're psychologically preparing us, putting hate and fear in our mind against extraterrestrials. And the U.S. presidency, as well as the leading officers of the military and the secret services, etc., come upon a psychologically sophisticated idea to work out a horror scenario in extraterrestrial matters, and to start in such a way that only America would be seized by it, not just America, but also all parts of the world. So we're being psychologically prepped for the next quote-unquote threat, which is not a real threat. It's a completely false threat. It's designed to bring in the New World Order, the Novo Ordo Seclorum, which is, I believe, the correct way to pronounce that. It's on the back of the dollar bill. It's the all-seeing eye. It's the global elite that want to take away your rights of self-determination, put a chip in your body so that you can be not allowed to buy or sell, put a chip in your body so you can be literally turned off if they want to turn you off. They want a one-world government. And they're going to bring in this concept through this war against the extraterrestrials. Anyway, I was looking at the word ID. It's pronounced ID, means idea, notion, brainchild, concept. And Contact 257 is describing the long-awaited extraterrestrial false flag invasion that we actually were warned of. We were warned about by Wernher von Braun, an invasion which will really be a hoax that comes from our own military. Our military has technologies which are much more advanced than the public realizes, and will play the role of the invading aliens. So for years now, the movie industry has been planting the notion in the mind of the public that there are negative ETs wanting to invade the Earth. So that will be the next thing once the terrorists have run their course. I think the next thing after that will be the meteors will be all made afraid of meteors coming from the sky, and then it will be extraterrestrial. So, well, I did at least get to introduce the new information. I'll have another show that I can post probably for Sunday, and then after that I have a guest on the 26th and the 28th of next week. I hope you've been enjoying these programs. I hope you enjoyed Dr. Jim Fetzer in the previous show. It looks like a lot of people did listen. Anyway, you've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day.